The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
So now we want to go around the world, from central banks to fiscal policy. What is moving the markets? Banker to the World is back. William R. Rhodes, his book, Leadership Lessons from the Front Lines of Global Finance, being translated into yet another language. Interesting, Bill, and welcome, of course. We're glad to have you in studio.
It's always great to be here with you, Kathleen, and also with Vonnie.
Of course, the mighty Quinn.
Exactly.
Of course, Bill is a former senior vice chairman at Citigroup, senior advisor to Citigroup, also the head of William R. Rhodes Global Advisors, and an author who's being translated into many languages. And I'm saying how fitting that now your book's out in Japanese, and you had a sort of a book signing event last week at the Japan Society. The focus last few weeks is so squarely on Japan. Today they announced their monetary stimulus, the 2% inflation target, buy more bonds, but they said they're not going to do it for a year. What is going on?
Well, I think this was no surprise in the sense of the 2%, because the new prime minister again, Abe, had already announced it in advance that before the election he was going to press Shirakawa, the governor of the Bank of Japan, to up their inflation target to 2%. So I don't think that was any surprise. He also has a stimulus package, which is the equivalent of 116 billion U.S. dollars, over a trillion yen, that he's announced. I must say that this is the, I think, since 1997, this is the 14th type stimulus program announced, and none of them have done the job. And so we have to see whether this one will.
Well, so that's on the fiscal side. But on the monetary side, this is a huge change for the Bank of Japan. But they're waiting a year to instigate this open-ended asset purchase program.
Well, I think there are two things here, Vonnie. One, Shirakawa is going to be replaced in April as governor of the central bank. And that's one point. So I think whoever is the new head of the Bank of Japan, their central bank, in April, will probably move it ahead. But the other thing is the Bank of Japan is very sensitive that they not be criticized to starting up the currency wars again, although I don't think the currency wars ever ended. And we already saw that Jens Weidmann, who is the head of the Deutsche Bundesbank, the central bank of Germany, has already warned the Japanese to watch what they're doing, and Merkel also made a comment. So I think that these may be two of the reasons, but I think that you will see it advance from 2014, the open-ended asset purchase. There's no doubt in my mind that you will. But all of these changes, I think, are what Abe had put on the table. What's really, I think, key here is that along with the fiscal and monetary stimulus, you do something that the Japanese have not been willing to do for decades, which is to move in the area of structural reform and deregulation, particularly of the service sector. And no program can succeed without a package, including deregulation and structural reform.
Be more specific.
Yeah,
that's a kind of a bland term for potentially making changes in a society, a culture, you know, that has been doing things a certain way for a long time. So what do you mean by that specifically? What do they need to do?
Well, I said deregulation in the service areas. I mean, just having been in Japan a couple of months ago, again, you see how the economy really needs to be opened up. And I think this is an opportunity. Abe has indicated he'll do so, but we'll see. And then you need an energy policy, because ever since you've had that tragedy with the nuclear meltdown, so to speak, in northern Japan, you really have not had a new energy policy. I mean, is the Abe administration going to utilize nuclear power or not? Mm. Because this is a major issue, because they don't produce their own energy.
Well, just before we get onto the energy.
And the aging population. Well, don't forget the aging population, which is also a big weight.
Just explain, though, what you mean by deregulating the service industries and opening up the economy more.
Well, I think there are a lot of old regulations on, and you also have that, I think, in the telecommunications area that have to be opened up more. So basically, it's opening up the system more, I think, to foreign investment, things that, you know, they say they do, but there are still a lot of controls.
Well, so open-ended asset purchases are going to be no help then, if that's what they need to do, right?
Well, I think it's a combination. Mm. What I'm saying is a combination of fiscal, monetary, and, you know, deregulation and structural reform. They're a package. And if he can put all of them together, I think you're going to see the private sector step up and invest. And see, that is one of the major points. And the governor, Shirakawa, who's a friend who I've seen three times in the last couple of months, has always made the point that fiscal monetary stimulus is not enough. You really have to get the private sector back in by structural reform and deregulation.
Do you mean
that
opening the economy up to more competition from the outside? Is that what you're talking about?
Outside and inside, both. So, I think you need both of them because you've seen China, Korea come along in areas that have been traditionally Japanese. And then another point, which I started to make before, is the aging population, which is it's a problem. And then the last but not least, and I think of what many people are concerned about, which is the debt to GDP.
Okay, debt GDP,
which is over 200%.
Population. We got a lot to talk about with Bill Rhodes, Banker to the World, on Bloomberg Radio.
On Wall Street, you're listening to The Hayes Advantage, and this Bloomberg Business Flash is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Visit your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealers for limited-time lease and financing offers on their complete lineup of 4MATIC all-wheel drive sedans and SUVs. On the web at searchmercedes.com, your source for everything Mercedes-Benz in the Tri-State area. Well, now it is higher markets across the board. The S&P 500 is up 0.3%, 4 points to 1490. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up more than 0.3%, 49 points now to 13,698. And even the Nasdaq Composite Index is higher. It's up almost 0.1%, 2 points to 3136. Now, leading the Dow higher, United Health Group and also Travelers. Travelers, the insurer, reporting earnings today that cheered the market. And then lower in the Dow, still Boeing, down 1.1%. The Coca-Cola company is down 1.4% as well, dragging things down. The DAX in Germany is down 0.7% in today's session, and stocks across the board in Europe were lower. And the yen today is strengthening, 88.72 yen to the US dollar. This after the Bank of Japan disappointed, said it will maintain asset purchases as they are for 2013 and begin open-ended asset purchases in 2014. Now we want to go around the world in 60 seconds, and for that we'll go to Irv Chapman in Washington.
Bonnie, President Obama has issued a statement on the 40th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, saying it protected the health and reproductive freedom of women across the country, and noting administration efforts to reduce unintended pregnancies and minimize the need for abortion. Senator Orrin Hatch issued a statement saying the court twisted the Constitution, ignoring the inalienable rights of the unborn. The House committee that writes tax bills is holding a hearing on the federal debt limit and the right of the White House to get around it. Professor Simon Johnson of Massachusetts Institute of Technology has just testified.
Take the debt ceiling off the table. Do it for the world economy. Do it for the global financial system, which is still not recovered. You will continue to undermine the private sector. You will continue to delay investment and to reduce employment relative to what it would be otherwise.
Michelle Obama's ruby-colored chiffon and velvet gown designed by Jason Wu is being donated to the National Archives, along with her navy Tom Brown coat and dress from the inaugural ceremony and parade. That suggests they'll be shown in a future Obama presidential library. In Washington, I'm Irv Chapman, Bloomberg Radio. Bonnie?
Well, thank you so much. That is Irv Chapman. And just to update you, Kathleen and listeners, the Houston Area Community College in lockdown this afternoon on reports of a shooter on campus. This is according to the Associated Press. Lone Star College System issued an alert on its website saying that the college had received reports of a shooter. Aerial footage showed police cars and ambulances parked on the campus. We'll keep you updated. Time now for the NYMEX report, and that's brought to you by Nadex. Are the markets quiet? Try Nadex, the binary options exchange. It allows you to find trading opportunities even when the markets are flat or quiet. Start trading at nadex.com. That's Nadex.com, Kathleen.
Oil hitting a four-month high. There's a few factors in the background. For one, German investor confidence climbed more than economists had forecast. In fact, Germany's ZOO Center for European Economic Research said its index of investor and analyst forecasts climbed up to 31.5 from 6.9 last month. So that's one of the factors. Now, there's also a Bloomberg survey showing international optimism about equities on the rise. Global investors, in fact, are the most bullish on stocks in the last 3.5 years, with almost two-thirds planning to boost holdings during the next 6 months. And, of course, the topic of our current conversation with Bill Rhodes, banker to the world, is the steps taken by the Bank of Japan, the long-awaited announcement that they are going to boost monetary stimulus aggressively, Vani, although that might not happen for a year. Even so, it's all got NYMEX crude up 0.6%, 57 cents a barrel, to $96.13.
Yes, definitely seeing some movement in the commodities and the commodity currencies as well, Kathleen. And, of course, the yen sparking all sorts of allegations of currency wars. We have the German Bundesbank getting in on that act now as well.
This portion of the Hays Advantage brought to you by New York Community Bank and New York Commercial Bank and the NYCB family of banks. Bank with confidence anywhere you see NYCB. Visit nycbfamily.com. Bill Rhodes in studio with us once again, former senior vice chairman at Citigroup. He remains a senior advisor to Citi, head of William R. Rhodes Global Advisors, author of Banker to the World, Leadership Lessons from the Front Lines of Global Finance, and the new edition is out. We're going to talk about that a little bit more because it's got a it's got this whole preface now on the Eurozone debt crisis. We got to finish up on Japan because this is certainly the news right now. So you are very concerned about Japan's debt to GDP ratio. What is it? Why is it such a worry?
The most recent figure that I've seen, it's 235% debt to GDP. And everyone's all concerned, obviously, about Greece because it's 170, 180. For Japan, it's the highest of any developed country in the world. My friend, the late great economist from MIT, Rudy Dornbusch, predicted, and this is a decade ago, that even though 90% of the government bonds are held by individuals or institutions in Japan, that one of these days they would have a real crisis with it. So
that's the difference, though, isn't it, Bill? Because the reason that Greece was a problem for the rest of the world was that little thing called contagion. There were so many banks and foreign investors,
which I talk endlessly about in my book and bring up again in my preface. But I think what it shows in Japan is that there's some limitation. In other words, at some point in time, it has to be addressed. This is why Noda tried to raise the sales tax and one thing or another. So there are limitations of what Japan can do. I think on the monetary side, one needs to remember, Bonnie, that the stimulus already in place by the Bank of Japan is over $1 trillion, not a trillion yen, $1 trillion. And they also talk about another equivalent of $100 billion to that. So the total would be, when you get to next year, $1.25 trillion of monetary stimulus. Now, the question is, how much more do you do? And we will see when the new governor comes in if they want to move ahead that date and of 2014.
Just briefly, Bill, because it's slightly, you know, concerning too. What's your thinking in terms of this conflict with China? Is it going to escalate? Will it hurt Japan?
Well, I think it's already hurt Japan, and I think it has an effect on China also. And I think it's a real problem. The U.S. is trying to help because Japan has a problem mainly with China, but also with Korea, with an island they call Takeshima, which is already occupied by Korea, given to Korea. So it's a problem with both. And you have a new president, President Park, just elected in Korea. You have a new leader, a new with the transition in, although the full powers don't come in until March, but basically you have a new president, a new premier in China, Xi Jinping, the president, and Li, the premier, as well as Abe. So you have three new players at the table. And they also have something in common, apart from being, arguing with each other over islands and being, you know, geographically right one next to the other, is they have an agreement they're working on, which is called a Northeast Economic Bloc, where you would have a free trade area between China, Japan, and Korea. The second and third largest economies in the world, China and Japan, and the 10th, which is Korea. But all of that at the moment is at a standstill over these arguments. So the answer to your question is, I think it is important that that this be worked out. And there have been a lot of, as you know, statements coming from all parties in this dispute, which have been very nationalistic. And so I think we will have to see over the coming months what the impact is going to be on Japan, on Korea, and on China.
China, the economy, the new leadership. What do you see there?
I'm optimistic. I had an opportunity as I've met with the new president on a number of occasions, which I've mentioned on the show before, Xi Jinping, over the years, even before he was considered someone who could reach the presidency. And I think he's going to do, he and Lee, the premier, will do several things. One, I think they're going to open the economy much more. I think particularly on the financial side, I think they're going to free up interest rates. I think they're going to move towards convertibility more rapidly than we've seen before, the RMB. And I think you'll see more action to emphasize the domestic economy and domestic consumption more than we've seen before, where the country's been very much reliant on exports and heavy investment. I think now you'll see more emphasis on the domestic consumption, which means they're going to have to put more money and emphasis on the social safety net to free up the savings rate, which, as you know, the savings rate in China is one of the highest in the world, which will then give the economy the opportunity of getting those savings for domestic consumption. So I'm very optimistic. They face these problems that Vani brought up on the international side. They also have real problems, as you saw, and I've again mentioned on this program many times, the problem with pollution, not only air pollution, pollution of water, pollution of food, and the rising middle class in China is going to demand action. But overall, I'm very optimistic.
Bill Rhodes is going to continue. Banker to the World, Leadership Lessons from the Front Lines of Global Finance, Senior Advisor to Citigroup, Head of William R. Rhodes Global Advisor. We've been talking about Asia. We've got to move on to Europe. Are the Europeans complacent, and what is the risk there? That's next on Bloomberg Radio. Now, Europe, we've talked about Japan, we've talked about China with Bill Rhodes, former senior vice chairman at Citigroup, a senior advisor to Citi to this day, and again, the author of Banker to the World, Leadership Lessons from the Front Lines of Global Finance. More than 50 years trotting around the world talking to leaders, bankers, and he still doesn't stop. In fact, you just got back from Europe, Bill, and you want to talk to us about European complacency, which I might add does seem to be reflected in the markets. They're doing fine. No one seems to be worried about Europe anymore.
Well, I think that unfortunately that's a problem, but what we see in Europe, I think, is a tremendous sense of complacency. I think with the action of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, with his commentary, and I was at that meeting, as I mentioned here. In fact, I was here right on your show, right after the 26th of July meeting, where Mario Draghi made that comment about do everything possible to defend the Eurozone, et cetera, make sure it didn't fail. And I was a questionnaire on the banking union. But with all the positives that we've seen, let's take a look where the reality is. You have a tremendous unemployment rate in the Eurozone now. It's a record. Since they started up in the Eurozone, it's since 1999, it's 11.8%, which is a tremendous figure for a developed country to have a unemployment rate like that. And when you take a look at two of the countries, Spain, where you have unemployment somewhere in the area of almost 26%, and the same in Greece, but what's particularly disturbing is when you take a look at youth under 25, it's over 50% in both of these countries. So these are depression-type levels. So I think that there's a lot of work still to be done. Now, Vani follows very closely Ireland, and Ireland is doing better, but Ireland still has a lot of problems too.
Absolutely. But Bill, I also want to, I guess, take issue with you a little bit in the sense that I'm not sure if you'd call it complacency, would you? I mean, these things can become very non-complacent very quickly if something takes a turn for the worse.
Right. And I think there are three things that people point to as progress over the last year in the Eurozone area. Number one, the announcement of a banking union. The problem is that when that was first discussed, which was in June of last year at the heads of state meeting, it was supposed to be fully implemented in place by the first quarter of this year. That was then pushed back at the time of the IMF World Bank meetings in Tokyo when the announcement came out that it was going to be pushed back till the first quarter of next year. And you still have an open-ended timeline on when that'll be fully implemented, and there are still some questions about who will regulate what in this plan. So it's not a done deal, and we don't have a final timeline on that. Number two, the OMT, outright monetary transactions, which is what Mario Draghi announced this past summer, and buoyed the market tremendously, lifted the market. We have not seen an actual transaction there because Spain, which is everyone's usual candidate suspect here, has not wanted to do it because the president, Rajoy, we call him a prime minister, but in Spain he's known as president, has not wanted to do it for two reasons. Number one, he doesn't want to put in additional conditionality because he figures that he's doing as tough a program on austerity as you can have. And number two, he has to be persuaded that there would be a major drop in cost of funding for the country's bonds to do so. And he's not persuaded either way, so you haven't had it happen. And we don't know what conditionality that the European Central Bank would ask for because they've been in discussions with the IMF on that and they haven't said anything specifically. The third leg of this stool, which is very crucial, is something that Chancellor Merkel of Germany has pushed right from the very beginning, is to have a fiscal pact. Because you can't have a monetary union without some sort of fiscal pact. The original one was Maastricht, was broken by Germany and France almost immediately. It was supposed to control deficits to 3% of GDP. And this fiscal pact would replace that. And so you need to get that implemented and approved by 12 of the 17 countries, and it hasn't been yet. Fortunately, Ireland, Vani, as you know, was one of the early ones. Last May, they approved it. So I think until you have all three of these in place, you can't afford to be complacent in Europe, in the Eurozone.
So maybe on the surface they put their best face on, and they are concerned about all of these. What is going to kick one of those legs out from under the stool? What is the risk here? What could precipitate the flaring up of the crisis again so the markets are moving on it, it's in the headlines, and not appearing to move to a back burner?
Well, I think if there was a lack of progress on any one of these three, and of course you have the continuing stagnation and negative growth recession in the Eurozone and also in much of the rest of the EU. And take a look at the UK as an example of this. So I think if they can't start turning around the economies in the sense of getting growth, and I've always been a big proponent on this program of saying at the end game here is growth. That's how the Brady Plan helped Latin America get out of growth. That's what really got the Asian financial crisis settled was growth. And so you've got to get growth.
So are we going to have riots in the street? Are we going to have people selling off the bonds again? What's going to precipitate this?
Well, you've had pretty close to that in Greece. And you've had demonstrations elsewhere, particularly in Spain. And I think the concern is you could have a political reaction here. So I think they need to move on these three points as rapidly as possible, get these economies back to growth. And having said that, you and Vani talk about where the euro is versus the dollar. I think the euro is overvalued because if you want to push growth, you got to push exports. And in order to push exports, as we see what's going on in Japan, you can't have the euro over 130 to the dollar. It should be more like 1-to-1.
Wow. So in your new edition of the book, the preface is on the Eurozone debt crisis, Banker to the World, Leadership Lessons from the Front Lines of Global Finance. You still got the foreword by former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker. Can we find more of these arguments elucidated in this new preface?
Definitely.
Outlook for U.S. growth, Bill, while you're at it?
That's a tough one. I think that most people think it'll be somewhere in the 2% area. If you're an optimist, some people are now talking about 3%. I think a lot of this will depend on how they wrap things up in Washington. There has been progress, but they've got to get to an agreement on spending. You saw the progress on the budget, but we need to get the spending cuts in there. But there is a possibility that could happen. One of the concerns that I have, which I mention here all the time, is the drop in world trade. And hopefully we'll see a turnaround in that from last year.
Okay. All right. Well, that just laying the table for our next discussion. Bill Rhodes, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Bonnie.
And thank you for joining us. Tomorrow we'll have the Federal Reserve in focus. We'll continue to look at the global economy and global politics. I'm Kathleen Hayes. Vonnie Quinn and I thank you for joining us. Vonnie sticking around. Pim Fox joining her, taking stock, taking you through the next 3 hours, the market close and beyond.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.